Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast, Season 6, Episode 96. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and because I'm doing the introduction today, that means David Todd, my co-host, is not with me again. This is typical downtime for David during the offseason. He's concentrating on Pirate stuff this time of year with them about to break spring training. We leave a lot of the draft stuff to talk about this time of the year, and because of that, we like to have Alex Cazora on quite a bit during this time of the off season. So, without further ado, Alex, welcome back. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, Dave. It's the start of allergy season though for me, so I kind of sort of maybe hate life right now. So I'm gonna try to play hurt.
You haven't seen that until you live down in Florida in March and April when the azaleas start blooming and the yellow dust is absolutely everywhere from all the pollen here. So,
I wouldn't survive, Dave. I wouldn't make it.
I don't think you would either. And as humid and as it is here as well too, it can be miserable. You know, I think we have springtime here. I think we have about 4 or 5 weeks of enjoyable weather here, and then it just gets absolutely 90-degree. Hot, not just hot, it gets sticky hot as well,
and
too.
You get those rain showers at like 3 in the afternoon every day, don't
you? Oh, yeah, we call them dog day afternoon, dog day thunderstorms, because they roll up right about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Boy, they get some boomers complete with lightning and all like that, but I won't have to concern myself with that much longer. Moving to Vegas here in a couple more months here, a little less than 2 months. So I'll just go straight to heat, dry heat. But that's the way I don't mind the heat. I just don't like all the humidity, as the saying goes. Mm-hmm. But we're not here to talk about the weather or climates or spring or summer. We're here to talk about the Steelers. And let's see, when we left off on Friday. As usual, some news stories seem to break after we get off the podcast, and that indeed happened on Friday. The Steelers, you know, we already talked about them bringing in Jeff Schwartz, the veteran offensive lineman, for a visit. Well, it appears as though somewhere in there, and I don't think it happened on Friday, I think it happened at some point this past week, they brought in Jacksonville Jaguars free agent Steve Wisniewski, Penn State boy. Primarily has played center, but does have some guard experience as well too. In fact, I think he open up at left or right guard, I can't remember, for the Raiders. So he can play both positions. I think his primary is center. It seems like he left town without a contract, obviously, and that's never a good sign, as we've mentioned several times when it comes to the Steelers bringing in free agents. And they also brought in a guy that I was intrigued with several years ago prior to the draft, Mike Martin, an interior defensive lineman, a little bit on the lighter side when it comes to nose tackles, but I was really, kind of intrigued by Martin coming out of, what was it, Michigan, right?
Yeah, Michigan.
Yeah, and several years ago. Hard to believe that he's already, a free agent on the street looking for work. It doesn't sound like Mike Martin signed, but, what are your thoughts on the Steelers bringing in those free agents?
Well, Dave, I wrote about it, I think, yesterday. You continue to see, Colbert's and Tomlin's kind of shift towards really investing heavily in the offensive line, and we've seen it in the draft, of course, and now you see it with the free agent moves. After bringing in Ryan Harris, you thought this team would be done on the offensive line, but then they bring in Jeff Schwartz for a visit, they bring in Wisniewski for a visit. Obviously neither assigned, and maybe they both don't end up signing. That's kind of the trend that we've talked about. Once a player leaves without a contract, he usually goes somewhere else. But I think it's just that commitment to trying to really invest heavily in the offensive line. And you have two guys in Schwartz and Wisniewski that have been dealt with a lot of injuries, but whenever they've been healthy, they've had a lot of talent. So there's a lot of value there where you can get them on the cheap. And if they stay healthy, then you've really got the most bang for your buck. And if they ultimately can't stay healthy, then you have a great group around them They can fill in, you know, seamlessly, a Cody Wallace, and of course you have Ryan Harris now at tackle. So if they could sign just one of those guys, Dave, if one of them circles back around, the amount of depth that you would have there would probably be some of the best in the league. I think if the team signs Schwartz, they'll have a combined 131 starts between him, Harris, and Wallace, and if it's Wisniewski, they'll have like 169. So I mean, you really see a commitment to this offensive line depth, which is, you know, you got to protect the franchise. So it's nice to see.
You know, when you hear the name Wisniewski and the talk about him being a center, obviously, several minds raced. Well, does this mean that there's something mm-hmm. wrong with Marquise Pouncey and his rehab? But, you know, as far as we know, you know, right now, there's absolutely no reason to be concerned about, you know, Pouncey where he is in his rehab. In fact, you know, his brother Mike just recently talked down at the owners' meetings last week about how him and his brother are really hitting rehab hard, and neither one is really limited, I don't think, at this stage of the off season. Yeah, I think it is what it is. I think it's the Steelers looking to provide as much experience depth as they can on the offensive line. And I don't think it has anything to do with Pouncey whatsoever. And you know, if anything, the person who would have to worry the most, I think, is if they signed either one of those two, might be Cody Wallace. Mm-hmm. You know, but even then, you know, a guy like Schwartz, I don't remember him ever playing center. You know, so I think if you brought in a guy like Wisniewski, you could probably, you know, save a complete roster spot there, maybe, you know, mm-hmm. because of his ability to play both guard spots and center. So, you know, I would hesitate getting too worried about Pouncey until we have a reason to. And I, you know, as I said, right now, all reports indicate that he's a full go, and I would expect him to be, you know, as soon as these OTA practices get going, I would expect him to be, you know, while it might be limited, a participant nonetheless.
Yeah, I hope so, Dave. And, yeah, I mean, I look at you being the optimist and not playing the cynical card. I appreciate that on a Monday, kicking things off right. Yeah.
Hey, my glass is usually half full now.
okay. We'll let that one slide. I don't believe that. But, I don't think Pouncey's got an issue. I mean, we've seen some of the, you know, we follow like Le'Veon Bell and guys like that on Snapchat, and we've seen Pouncey rehabbing pretty hard. I mean, I think, you know, he's been on vacations with his girlfriend right now. He's not holed up in a hospital right now with some sort of major complications. So, I mean, there could be a little bit of an insurance policy there, but I don't think the move was brought in because, oh man, Pouncey has some sort of terrible setback. We don't know if he's going to be ready week one. I think he'll be fine. I mean, I hope he'll be fine. I know he obviously had a complication at some point along the way, you know, during the regular season. But I just think it's just the ability to target, you know, a talented player that's had some injury problems that, and again, that presents really good value, and it gives yourself some fantastic depth if you can make the signing. I mean, you know, I wrote about it again on Sunday, like I said earlier, Dave, that after the 08-09 Super Bowl, where they had Darnell Stapleton and what was that, Hartwick, I think, at center, this team really decided to turn on its head and invest heavily in the offensive line in the draft, and now you're continuing to see that in free agency. So, you know, that shift was pretty immediate once you see some of those guys come across the offensive line. So, you know, you got to protect Ben and kind of like get his career as long as you can.
Do you remember that season, that Super Bowl, the season that ended with the win over the Cardinals, the shape of that offensive line?
Yeah, not good. I remember the Super Bowl with Hartwig himself getting run into the end zone. And or was he called for holding on that play?
It was a holding call.
Yeah.
It was a holding call.
Yeah, and Snell, I mean,
for the safety there.
Right, and granted, they got to the Super Bowl, so you can say they won a Super Bowl with that group, and hats off to them. But when you kind of look at that and you say, maybe we can do a little bit better. And I know, I think there was an injury. What, Kendall Simmons, I think, got hurt early that year, and that forced Stapleton in, I think, if my mind is right on this.
Yeah, had a tackle issue as well, too, I think, early on in the season, right?
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look it up again. But, yeah, I mean, there were injuries that kind of forced their hands, so it wasn't that Stapleton was a day-one starter. But you get my point, is you need really good depth, and you want to build and reinvest in that offensive line. And right after that, for the next, I think, 3 or 4 years, they were drafting a tackle or an offensive lineman within the first two rounds. It produced DeCastro, produced Pouncey. I mean, they did get guys like Craig Erbick and Mike Adams, but, you know, you got some really good players. Marcus Gilbert, I mean, all those guys came within, like, 3 years after that Super Bowl.
let's take a trip down memory lane here. The Super Bowl against the Cardinals starting offensive line left to right. Max Starks, Chris Kimoatu, Hartwig, Darnell Stapleton, Willie Colon at right tackle.
Wow, right tackle.
Your week one starting offensive line that season in the game against the Houston Texans was Marvell Smith, Chris Kimoato, Hartwig, Kendall Simmons, Willie Colon.
Yeah, yeah.
And Starks was primarily up to that point was a right tackle. Maybe I don't think we really even knew if he could swing or not at the time. You know, and then, of course, Marvell Smith, I think it was the back that ended up getting him about four or five games into the season. And then Kendall Simmons, I forget exactly what the issue that he had during the season. But the fact that they went on to win the Super Bowl that season with all those changes on the offensive line was incredible. Thoughts on Mike Martin?
Yeah, you know, this is a guy that, like you, Dave, was interesting out of Michigan. I mean, this dude is just rocked up. He was one of those old-school, no-neck, all-muscle kind of guys. And he had a really good rookie year in Tennessee. He got drafted pretty high, I think, in the third or fourth round. He had three sacks his rookie year. He saw the field a lot. And then it just kind of went downhill from there. And I think the Titans had some scheme changes. I think they switched to a 3-4 at some point along the way. But, I mean, last year he played, I think, 50 snaps the whole season on defense. So, I mean, his career has just gone downhill in a hurry. So, I mean, maybe you could do a little bit in sub-package, but you kind of think him as a primary nose tackle. He's 6'1", doesn't have a lot of length, 32 1/4-inch arms is what he weighed in at way back in the combine. So I think he's just kind of a low-tier nose tackle just to try to fill the void there left by Steve McClendon.
One gap technique type defensive tackle, right?
Yeah, the profile was that he was a pretty good pass rusher, and he might fit as the 3-tech in a 4-3. Again, I really haven't seen tape on him since Michigan, and I did like him out of Michigan. And again, if you want to find tape, you're going to have to go back to his rookie year because you're not going to find a lot over the last 2 years. He did get his weight down. He was playing, I think, in 2014 in the 315 range, and I know it was an article, I think, in training camp this year, where he had gotten his weight down to 295. So he was trying to play a little bit lighter, a little bit quicker. Obviously, he didn't translate the snaps, but, you know, I'm curious what his weight would end up actually being if at Pittsburgh would make him bulk up, which is my guess if they sign him, they'd ask him to put on a little bit of weight.
Yeah, you would think around 315 or 320 is where they would like him, wouldn't you?
Yeah, that's my guess. I mean, it's hard to play nose tackle in this 3-4, you know, at 300 pounds. So, you know, it'd be tough to evaluate even the 50 snaps last year. He's playing a different way that he'd be playing at now. So, you know, it's a difficult evaluation and one that if it happens, of course, we're going to go look at. But you kind of just have to throw your hands up in the air and say, well, wait till training camp because it's really, really hard to evaluate Mike Martin.
Yeah, with that said, if he was brought on board, you would think, A, it would be for a minimum salary, and B, you really would have to wonder how many snaps he could help alleviate when it comes to being a nickel type guy as well, too, right?
Yeah, and again, I mean, that's the big elephant in the room. Can you get some depth behind Haywood and Tuitt? He doesn't have a lot of length, though, and so that kind of looks like more of a profile of a true, you know, nose tackle. So, I mean, if they bring him in, I mean, it might be one of those things where, you know, you could say that's one of the few guys that Colbert would bring in that might not make the week one roster.
He's the type guy that, you know, if he stays unsigned from that, he's a typical post June 1st type of guy.
That's a great way. Yeah, great point.
You know, that could potentially be brought in. So more than anything, I think the Steelers kicking the tires on a couple of these guys, especially a guy like Schwartz. We talked about, you know, you want to get the good medicals on. I don't know why Wisniewski's unsigned right now. I mean, that really doesn't make any sense. You know, maybe he's got an offer out there from the Jacksonville to resign with them. Maybe he's just wanting to check his market out right now. But obviously, it's cold for a guy. I mean, he's probably one of the best available starting quality guys out there right now at this point, right?
Yeah, but I mean, there's not a ton of them out there left to really compare to. I mean, you know, he's always been big on talent, but I think the health has been an issue. And you know, I forget if it was who was it, Caldwell, or if it was Bradley, or someone had said that they were basically going to let him test the market. So I mean, it didn't seem like Jacksonville was really, you know, driving a hard bargain to bring him back. Now, maybe there's an offer on the table or from somebody. But, you know, this is a guy that does have an injury history, and the medical could be some sort of issue.
Talking about a player in cold markets, Brandon Boykin. I would have bet you a lot of money that he would have signed somewhere by now, and he hasn't, but that could change quickly. There was a report, I believe, Friday or Saturday, that he would be visiting the Carolina Panthers today being Monday. Why do you suppose Brandon Boykin's gone all this time unsigned?
I don't know, Dave. That's a great question. If I'll use the Tomlin phrase, if I had the answer to that, I'd bottle it and sell it. I just don't know if it's an asking point thing. I think that there could be an issue with Boykin thinking that he's an outside guy and most teams viewing him as a slot guy. And I think if he goes to Carolina, he'll probably play in the slot. If you read some of the comments that the Panthers front office has made, they felt like they wanted to upgrade their slot and their nickel corner as opposed to the outside. So maybe there's an issue there. I mean, it could be something weird with an agent just not marketing him well or not handling negotiations well. I mean, there's a ton of variables involved. You know, just some players slip through the cracks. So it does sound like Boykin's going to probably sign within the next day or two. I think Ian Rappaport had followed up Fowler's report that about three or four other teams were interested in Boykin. So that market, which has been cold for so long, is finally heating up, and I would expect Boykin to sign here pretty shortly.
Do you think he handled things well last year?
I think to the public and the media, he did. I mean, he said about all the things that you can for a guy that got traded. You know, it's not fun to get traded in training camp. You think you're going to play for one team, and then all of a sudden you're going to another, and you're trying to learn things, and you're trying to find a role, and have you have your own personal expectations. So I'm sure that was the most frustrating year of his career. I mean, I don't know what he did behind closed doors, but to the public and to the media, he said about all the things that you can say for a guy in that kind of situation. So, you know, I tip my cap to him for doing that, but behind closed doors, maybe he wanted to fist fight Tomlin, I don't know.
At times, do you think he could have towed the company line a little bit better, though?
No, I mean, I don't think he ever said anything that maybe said, you know, hey, man, I don't, you know, you shouldn't say that. I mean, we talk about how boring player interviews are sometimes, and they should be more honest, and so I would never really criticize the guy if he was just showed a little bit of honesty and a little bit of his, you know, emotions on his sleeve. I think we all understood he was frustrated, and I don't think Boykin totally hid that in some of his comments that he, you know, he's talking about he was surprised that he wasn't playing. I think everyone had kind of thought that, but he never came out and just, you know, just destroy Tomlin in the front office the way that maybe another player might. So, you don't have to toe the company line. I mean, you got traded here. You didn't ever intend on signing here in the first place. So you don't have to be the perfect soldier. So I don't have a problem with anything Boykin said.
Why do you think we overvalued him, or did we overvalue him?
Yes, he got overvalued just because he got put up on this pedestal. I think it was just because of the poor play of Antoine Blake and guys like that, and you were just really frustrated about, you know, why Boykin wasn't out there. I don't know exactly why. I think most people thought that he could play on the outside. I don't think the team viewed him that way. Like I said before, Dave, and many times before, I think he got traded here to be the backup slot guy. Because Golson went down and he was supposed to be the backup slot to William Gay, and that's why Boykin was brought in, just to give you that depth, because no one else on that roster could have played the slot corner spot. So I think there was a disconnect there between where he was going to play in Pittsburgh and where Steeler fans thought he could play.
It's going to be interesting to see where he lands. I don't think I think wherever he does land, he will play in a slot.
Yeah.
Let's face it, he has tackling concerns, too.
I guess he's not the best tackler, but from what I saw in Pittsburgh, if I just take that in a vacuum, I mean, what did he miss? How many tackles did he miss? One at the end of, I think, I forget what game it was, but I think it was one missed tackle at the end of the Raiders game or something.
Indy game for sure.
Yeah, I think it was the Indy game. I mean, I never really watched it.
Denver too, right? Playoff?
Yeah, a lot of guys had tackling issues that game,
yeah.
Though. I don't know. I mean, I never really saw it any more than any other corner. I mean, hey, even William Gay misses tackle sometimes.
You know, if you bottle up his career, go back to the year that he had, six interceptions as a member of the Eagles. If you just look at that tape alone, it's hard to believe he's unsigned.
Yeah, I don't know what the disconnect is. I think, again, there's some expectations about him wanting to play outside and hoping that he could, and maybe just finally realizing if you have Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, and now all the other, you know, free agent, you know, teams interested in you saying you're slot corner, since you got to just throw your hands up and say, yeah, that's who I am.
Wherever he does sign, will he make more or less than $3.5 million a season?
Well, the last big corner to come off was Patrick Robinson, who got about 4.67. It was, I think, a three-year, $14 million deal with the Colts. And he reportedly had turned down more money from Dallas and took a discount to go to the Colts. So, you know, in that quick post I had written up, I kind of just threw out some numbers and thought he would get around 3.5 to 4. I'll say that he get. I mean, just if we is the over under 3.5? Is that what you said?
Right, you got to go over or under.
I will just. I'll be fun here. I'll say just under 3.5.
And I'll say just over. Okay. I'm floored that he's still unemployed. Be honest with you. But I think that will change this week. As well. Let's see.
Let me ask you real quick, Dave. For the Steelers free agents that they brought in, Schwartz, Wisniewski, and Martin, do you think any of them sign?
Unfortunately, no.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. I think Martin might have the best chance of the three. But
I think I would go with you as well too, and I could see that possibly happening after June 1st,
mm-hmm. And it may be,
or after the draft.
Yeah, you know? But hey, they could draft somebody and they could get comfortable and then just say, you know, no thanks, Mike. You know.
Right, exactly. Needless to say, their investment in any, should they make one in any one of those three players, wouldn't be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially with the injury concerns of Schwartz and Wisniewski.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we'll see. I think they're still looking for a defensive lineman maybe that can, you know, a defensive end kind of pass rushing specialist, mm-hmm. Probably one that won't fit the parameters that we're used to seeing one. I still think they're after a guy like that maybe, and yeah. And whether or not they're able to get one prior to the draft. Remember, that's still a month away. So
yeah.
A lot can happen between now and the draft, and I think something will as far as another signing or two. I just don't know who it's mm-hmm. going to be at this point. Talking about cornerbacks. I don't know about you, but I spent Easter Sunday with Mackenzie Alexander.
I did not.
More specifically, Mackenzie Alexander's 2015 tape. As many of you already know, I went and broke down last week all of Mackenzie Alexander's 2014 pass targets. I have now done the same with Mackenzie Alexander in his 2015 tape. Boy, I actually want to talk about an undertaking.
Yeah, I can't believe you did that. I mean, I can, but I can't.
You know, and luckily, you know, using the VLC player and the beauty of hotkeys and fast forward, there's still a lot to look at when you go through that many games, of a season, that many targets. And I had the results and video up this morning, Monday morning on SteelersDepot.com. When you look at the total numbers, I have him being targeted a total of 54 times. He gave up 16 receptions for a total of 252 yards. No touchdowns. There should have been one. Had a receiver beating deep. What was that? Louisville game. Dropped. Went off the end fingers of the wide receiver there. I thought that should have been six. Let's see, I should point out that Alexander was penalized twice, I believe, during those 54 targets. One of those was a fake punt in the game against Syracuse, I believe. Totally mugged the guy going, you know, deep down the field there. And let's see, additionally, all but three of the receptions that Alexander allowed in 2015 resulted in first downs. Both the interceptions that you'll see listed in the chart that I have in the post were registered by Clemson teammates on balls that were kind of, you know, intended for Alexander. One of them was a Hail Mary at the end of one of the games. I'm trying to remember which one it was specifically. It might have been the Louisville game. I can't remember right off the top of my head. That counted as a target. He was, you know, playing one of several players playing center field back there. I think he might have got a hand on that one, and another player intercepted it. I guess when push comes to shove, when we're talking now about a player that over two seasons, 2014-2015, was targeted, roughly 110 times, I think. Didn't give up a lot of receptions, didn't give up any touchdowns, but I think, I think that the tape bears this out too. He only had 10 pass breakups, during those two seasons. He's not around the ball as much as you would like. There are a lot of, in addition to him not being targeted a lot in coverage, he wasn't close to a lot of the balls that he was targeted on. A, either he didn't have good coverage on, or B, the throw was just uncatchable by anybody. Mm-hmm. It's hard to hold that against a cornerback, obviously. But he did play a lot of press. He played a lot of off zone. He played really one thing that stuck out to my mind when going through this 2015 tape was he played a lot of press bell, mm-hmm. and he would just take off, turn, and run. Almost a mentality of don't give up the big play, don't get beat deep, And one thing that I think really stuck out to me is he does not defend the underneath pass well because of that. You hardly see him break cleanly on a ball moving forward. I didn't like his footwork a lot of the times. And to be quite honest with you, I think I mentioned this in the other podcast when talking about his 2014 film, I didn't see his ups. Mm-hmm. I don't see his ability to go up and defend balls. Now, remember that a lot of times he was targeted probably more than 15 to 20 yards down the field as well. Teams trying to get him singled up and test outside coverage. That, of course, 9 times out of 10 is going to play in a cornerback's favor percentage-wise anyway because it takes a perfect throw. I think he is a corner that benefited greatly for the two seasons that he played in Clemson because of the pass rush. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at who he had there over mm-hmm. the course of the last 2 years. And I dare you to turn on tape where, you don't hear the announcer saying the quarterback's under pressure again. I mean, it just seemed like that defensive front really, really played a big role in the secondary at Clemson being so good. I guess what I'm saying in a nutshell here is I would pass at him. I would pass on him at 25 overall if I'm the Steelers. I would not even consider drafting him in the first round. I think he is a product of a good pass rush there. I don't think he has the kind of, obviously the turnovers are concerning, but so is the fact that he didn't contest a lot of balls there. Mm-hmm. You throw in the fact that he's a phone book under 5'11". I think there's a lot of concerns about him, and while I'm not sure this is going to happen, I'm going to kind of sort of point to the fence here. Don't be surprised if he falls out of the first round completely.
Wow. Well, it's hard for me to try to disagree with you, Dave, because I think I've watched maybe 3 games and certainly did not chart the last 2 seasons of his life. So a big golf clap to you, Dave, for that. It's a great point about the pass rush. I mean, that Clemson front 7 was nasty even this past year with Shaq Lawson and Kevin Dodd and DJ Reader. And, last year they had Anthony, the linebacker, kind of, one of their best guys. So you're right. I mean, that pass rush probably, it's a cornerback's best friend. I think part, and again, I'm just listening to your words now and not really going through through as much of the tape, but, some of that stuff underneath, if he is bailing, I mean, that's a schematic thing, and I don't know if that's necessarily Alexander's fault, but maybe he's going to need work on his pedal and just hasn't been in his pedal a lot. Maybe that's one thing that he just has to really, really rep. The vertical is really interesting because he did test well to combine 37.5 inches, but you need to see it translate to the tape. And I know that you're not really seeing it, Dave. So I wonder if it's a timing thing. I wonder if it's a being able to locate the football thing. If there's an issue there that's kind of, causing him to not really show that vertical. And I to take him off, that's, you put in the work, so I can't really disagree with it. But That'd be surprising to see him fall in the second.
Well, where would you disagree with me? In now I had the head start on two full seasons against you.
Yeah.
But you know, where would you disagree with? Tell me why he should be a first round cornerback. Let's do it that way.
Well, I mean, like I said, you know, you have seen almost infinitely more tape than I have, so it's hard for me to disagree because I've only seen a couple games. But I think that. Let me
add to, he's not great after the catch when it comes to tackling.
Yeah, I think, again, he's a guy that's a little bit of an ankle nipper, and he's got to, you know, get his, you know, wrap up, and he's got to get his tackling point a little bit higher. I think there's an issue there. I don't think he's passive, though. I think he does embrace contact, and he does look to tackle. I think some of the issues that you're presenting is part maybe schematic with all the bail, the technique that he's working. It is harder to get downhill. You are going to allow more underneath if you're going to press bail and things like that. So I think there might be a bit of a schematic component to that. I think he's got really good hits. I think he's really fluid. His change of direction is fantastic. If you see him get beat off the line of scrimmage, you know, by stem of the receiver's route, he recovers really well. You know, I think he's got good feet. I think he's really flexible kid. You know, I think that has enough speed. I think his frame is, I think he's, you know, I don't call him short. He's average height. I think he's a little under 5'11". But he's got a good frame. I don't think it's a skinny, you know, lanky frame the way that an Eli Apple is. I think he, you know, you play in SEC or ACC competition. I mean, you're facing some good receivers. I think he's relatively battle tested. Like I said, it's hard for me to disagree with you, just because you put it into the crazy amount of work that I certainly haven't. But I think athletically, I think he's a good player.
Could you see him, and I wrote this in the Monday Post, could you see teams liking him more as a slot nickel corner?
Well, let me ask
because
you,
of the way,
what made you...
Because of the way he can turn?
I think that, you know, you're always open to it. I think the biggest thing I look for in the slot is just that ability to kind of, you know, that real short area quickness and change of direction. I think Alexander can do that. You know, did he play much in the slot? I don't think he played any in the slot.
He,
or did he?
Actually, he did. Okay. Go back, and that's another thing that kind of caught my eye about, I think, starting about midway through the season, and I think you'll see that in the tape as well, too. They did line him up inside more than I thought they did.
Okay, so, I mean, yeah, it's always possible. You know, maybe you could do a thing, I mean, it'd be asking a lot of a rookie, but maybe throughout his career, where you start him outside and you kick him inside on you know, sub-package football, so... I don't have a great opinion either way on it, but I mean, if they did it, then I mean, sure, he could do it again at the NFL level.
So you think he's a first round corner, though?
I mean, I really should get into more tape, especially if I'm going to try to talk to you about it with the crazy 20 games that you've seen on it. But I would have him in the first round.
But you have him as the fourth corner, am I correct, above Eli Apple?
I have him above Eli Apple. I think I said, what did I say last time, that I think I would have him just ahead of William Jackson, but again, I don't really have my definite list in. So I think, well, Jalen Ramsey, Vernon Hargraves is most people's top two, and then I think I would probably have Mac 3, Jackson 4, I don't know if I'd even have Eli Apple 5. I might put somebody else there. So that's fluid. I mean, that's me off the top of my head. So that could change. But
wow, you're that down on Eli Apple. Huh?
I mean, not
a fan.
I mean, for Pittsburgh especially, you got to be able to tackle. And he works hard. He tries to stay clean, but he's got a really skinny frame, and he just gets washed really easily.
You know what? The thing I thought maybe that here's the thing. I want to break down both William Jackson and Eli Apple, at least both of their 2015 seasons the way I've done McKenzie Alexander, and I will prior to the draft. I mean, we've got a month left. I mean, for me to be able to knock out those players, I should be able to. The problem I'm running into that I thought I might run into with William Jackson is being able to find all the tape. And with that said, if any of you out there listening to this have the Houston game against Tulsa, have the Houston game against Louisville, or have the Houston game against UConn, those are, I believe, are the only three games that I'm short of being able to do a complete breakdown on William Jackson. Now, Ohio State film is a little bit more readily available, at least game tape, you know, TV tape goes. So I think I might actually, and I kind of tease people in the Friday Five Questions you know, asking him would they rather me do Alexander's 2015 season or William Jackson. And being as how the initial push was for Alexander, I went ahead and mopped him up. I might do Eli Apple next because I feel like I know – I feel like I know a little bit more about him than I do William Jackson right now at this stage of the game. So I want to go back and take a good look at him. And besides, I think Eli Apple was only targeted roughly 60 times in 2015 versus Jackson, who was targeted almost 100. So I'm going to put the bigger elephant in the room off until after I tackle Eli Apple. And I'll try to pay a closer attention, even though you'll mostly be focused on targets and whatnot. I'll try to pay more attention as I go through his 2015 tape as to how he plays against the run as well, too. So, you know, I guess what I'm saying is, look, we expect those top two cornerbacks off the board by the time the Steelers pick. You tend to think, and we've seen this in some mocks already. We've seen both sides of this already. We've seen Mackenzie Alexander go in the top 20, and I think Bucky Brooks or one of these NFL media guys in their most recent offerings has Alexander outside the first round now.
Oh, really?
So. I think there's a little bit of confusion right now as to where Alexander, Jackson, and Apple all fall. And that shouldn't be surprising because there's been kind of that indecision for most of the offseason here, I think, with these three. But you're really of the opinion that Eli Apple could be the one that could fall out of the first round completely.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. Like you said, David, everyone's kind of got their guy. Everyone's kind of in a corner somewhere, and rankings are all over the board. I think ultimately the farther we go into this thing, the more that you're going to see maybe an Eli Apple and maybe a Mackenzie Alexander kind of quote-unquote fall, and you're going to see William Jackson rise up past where 25 is at, and you could see him go in the top 20 of a lot of mocks, I bet. It could go any way, though. It's a very difficult situation to evaluate. Every team is going to evaluate differently, and as the old saying goes, it only takes one team to fall in love for them to go off the board higher than people think or in the first round just in general.
So that's my plans as far as those two players go. Probably will attack Eli Apple first. Like I said, I've got a lot of his tape already downloaded already on the computer, so that should be look for that sometime maybe by this next weekend, and then after that I'll try to tackle William Jackson's 2015 season. With a couple weeks ahead of the draft there. You have been busy breaking down a few players for the site recently, and you know one thing before I forget about it. Curse, that safety, that's the guy the Steelers are interested in.
Yeah, he's in for a visit.
That is the guy that really kind of shows up on tape too. You know, I found myself going, who was that? You know, and nine times out of 10, it was Curse. I really think that's the safety the Steelers have their eye on for, I don't know what, second, third, fourth round. I haven't got a good gauge on where he will ultimately fall, but I think he's what? He's a top 6-7 safety in this year's class, right?
I didn't really like him, Dave. I've seen both the Clemson safeties. I just did the report on TJ Green today, and I like Green a whole lot more than I like Curse. I think Curse is a big guy that'll put his face in the fan, but I think he's just a really stiff guy that isn't going to time well. I don't really know what to do with him as a player. He didn't have a good pro day from, I think, what Tony Pauline said, so I don't know where he fits. I don't know where he's going to thrive.
Curse is probably the one that could be most versatile, right?
Yeah, probably. I think Green profiles best as a box safety, though I think Green has the tools to become more versatile than Curse. You know, Green is a true junior that has, 1 year of starting experience. I'm not sure why he declared early. But, you know, he timed – I mean, he had a great combine. His workout numbers were fantastic. He ran, I think, 4.35, and I don't really see that on tape necessarily, but I think that, he's shown some IQ and taking good angles of the football. I think he works hard. He's a great, strong safety. He's going to thrive within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage. And if you coach him up, which I know is a catch-all for everything, but you know, within some coaching and some seasoning for a young guy like Green, I think he could become the more versatile piece. I don't know what Curse does really well outside of being maybe a physical player.
Let's see here. You also broke down.
I did Kenny Clark? I think we're going to talk about the
Kenny
other
Clark.
Day.
Yeah, and we never got to him the other day. Talk a little bit about what you know about Kenny Clark.
Super strong. I mean, you just can't move the guy. He's just a guy that can take on double teams and combo blocks, and he's very tough to move. This is a guy that does not have any go-to pass rush move, though, and we know the big bugaboo for defensive linemen, especially in the Steelers 2-4-5, is you got to get after the quarterback. You have to show something consistently as a pass rusher. And while Clark will occasionally flash and he shows good effort to fight through double teams and to really work hard, and some of his sacks were and pressures were very, you know, well-earned kind of plays, not just, you know, you got on block because the offensive line screwed up their assignment and you come in free. He really had some really, again, hard-earned sacks. I just don't see enough of a pass rush. I don't think he's good enough of an athlete. Dave, I think he really fits best in the 4-3, playing that one tech and just kind of occupying bodies and being a force there. So as much as I like Kenny Clark, and I really do, Dave, I just don't think he's a good fit for Pittsburgh.
And round two guy?
Yeah, I have him kind of in the mid-round two. 10 years ago, you're talking about a top 15 pick, Dave. I really believe that with Clark. But with the emphasis on pass rushing for defense alignment and the ability to get pressure with a four-man rush, more heightened than maybe ever it's been, Dave, I see him dropping into the mid-second.
You also wrote about, and you've got a great series on what the Steelers look for as far as certain positions go when it comes to college players and draft picks. You just recently wrapped up the one on outside linebackers. Don't give away the whole thing, but tease it a little bit.
The outside linebackers or the whole study
right.
in general?
No, the outside linebacker.
Yeah, it's the criteria was – the thing that got me was some of the criteria in the agility drills. The thing is, Dave, it's not a lot of these guys at the combine, they don't do the agility drills anymore, and I don't know why that is. I don't know if that's agents getting in their ear saying, hey, let's do this at your pro day and in a more controlled, comfortable environment. So it was tough to find really exact, perfect fits for that for those reasons. It's interesting, just kind of the spectrum of the guys the Steelers have taken. It was fun to kind of see some of the old names again, Chris Carter and Thad Gibson and Bruce Davis. Generally they want guys with some weight, 240 pounds at least, that have, some measure of athleticism, though it's not anything, I don't think it's anything ridiculously crazy. But I was able to find three linebackers that fit, and I'll just say the names, we don't have to really talk about them much, but Stephen Weatherly, Kyler Fackrell, and Leonard Floyd, and Floyd could be a first-round guy, and they probably will be, and while Fackrell's a mid-round, and Weatherly is kind of a late-round guy, so you kind of found, three different areas of the draft, three guys that might fit if the Steelers want to take an edge guy.
Did you leave off Chickalo for a reason?
Well, it's just really tough because he was a 3-4 end in college, and yes, he's playing outside linebacker now, but Chickalo is just such a weird guy that, he played a different position than the other guys did in college. So, you could make the case to put him back on. I understand that argument, but he's just that weird case,
Would his numbers, because of his weight and all too, wouldn't even... They would be outside the norm.
Yeah,
right?
It's almost unfair to put that in the criteria because the way he's getting judged. He wasn't playing. He's down at 250 something now, but he wasn't playing like that. In his senior year in the combine, he weighed in at 267. So it's almost unfair though. I'm just looking up his numbers real quick right now. They wouldn't have. He tested well, so he wouldn't have. He wouldn't have come changed the criteria at all for the worse.
Was there a reason Jenkins didn't what held Jenkins out? Do you remember?
I think it was the 40 time. Because the thing is, and this is this is a debate about the study. Is I only for any timed events, 40 or agility drills, I only use the combine number, so I don't use any pro day numbers because of how unreliable they are and how they vary from team to team. And so from the outside linebackers at the combine, which I think were four or five of them, you know, they all ran a sub 4.8. But I understand that Jarvis Jones ran probably pretty poorly. But my criteria was a 4.8, so that's what I kind of had to go off of to stay consistent with everything else that I've done. So let me look up Jenkins.
And he ran a 4.8 supposedly at the combine, and he didn't do the 20-yard shuttle or the 3-cone, and I don't think I've seen what he did those in at his pro day.
Yeah, I would think I had sub 4.8, so he kind of just barely missed it.
There's a train.
Yeah, that's, you're on the Jordan Jenkins train, aren't you, Dave? You're the conductor, I'm pretty sure.
No, I'm not the conductor, but I like him. I really like what I saw in the three games that I did of him. I haven't looked past that. I think he has upside. I think he's a third or fourth round guy though. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think he's one of those. I think he's a typical tweener that the Steelers kind of look for, and an incredible character. Long arms. I mean, really a guy that should excel playing against the run. I think the biggest question is can he become a better pass rusher at the NFL level? I think that's the only question that teams will have about him because of his limited production. I think he's more of a pressure guy than he is a sack guy, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I would have liked to seen a little bit more consistent pressure with him during his time at Georgia.
Well, that's a million-dollar question, Dave. Can you be a good pass rusher? If you can't check that box, it doesn't almost matter what else you have on the table. But Jenkins came close to my criteria. I mean, he was right there, so I mean, he could definitely fit.
And Leonard Floyd scares me to death.
Yeah, I know you don't like him. He's all over the map from what people think.
Right, I mean, geez, who was the guy the Browns drafted?
Mingo.
Yeah, and the kid in Miami.
Deion Jordan, yeah.
Right, you know, he's right there, some of those traits that I'm like, oh, man, it's kind of a tough he's more of a guy that you wish you could put some about 25 pounds on, just make him a 4-3 defensive pass rushing defensive end, you know. More of a specialist. So you don't have him as a first round guy, do you?
I mean, I really didn't get into his tape too close. I know he's just all over the map, though. I mean, some people think he's a top 15 guy. Other people think he's barely a first rounder. I talked to one guy, Ben Fennell, the other day on Twitter, who's a really smart guy and has coach's tape. Lucky him, and he just doesn't see a standout defining trait with Floyd. So I'd have to look at him a little bit closer.
See, and I feel the same way about him as I do Shalik Calhoun out of Michigan State. He is more of a pass rushing specialist than anything, if you ask me. He can get after the quarterback, but anything else, I would really worry about having Calhoun on the field against the run.
He's actually one of the next on my list, and I can't wait to watch him because I'm really looking for some of those edge guys in this kind of weak class. And I hope he's there at 58. If I like the tape, then cause he looked really good at the combine. I mean, he was very fluid in his drops. And some people think he's only a 4.3 ender only though that shouldn't be dropping and can only get upfield and rush the passer. So I don't know. I gotta take a good look at him.
That's what I have him pegged as a 4.3 pass rusher, right now. So we'll see if what you have to think about him as well too. If I were to say, which guy do you feel that you missed on? I'll start this. The guy that I feel that I have the most opportunity to miss on so far, and guys that I've kind of written and talked about extensively throughout this offseason, I think maybe it's Chris Jones. I just don't see it. I worry about him taking those plays off. He's hot and cold in my opinion, but that's the guy that I feel, and we'll see if where he ends up going. So several people still have him in first round. I have him as a third round guy, but I think he's the guy that I have the most potential to kind of miss on in sort of my evaluations this offseason. Your guy is?
Oh, man, that is a really good question, Dave. I'm just kind of looking through my list here to make sure I don't miss anybody.
Has to be Thompson, right?
Yeah, that's the name I was looking at, just because, I mean, if you know, his pro day is the 31st, so it's coming up here pretty soon. And so that's going to be really, really big to see how he times and if the excuse of him being sick at the combine really kind of is valid. So, yeah, I think if there's one guy that I could really miss on, it's Darian Thompson, because if the athletic traits aren't there, he could get exposed. Let me see if I can find maybe one more name. Yeah, self-evaluation is tough. no doubt about it.
The thing is, and while you look, you know, what's so hard is the preconceived bias at times, mm-hmm. you know, and especially against more than other evaluators who you know good and damn well haven't watched a lot of their tape.
Yeah, I try to tune everything out as much as possible. I know you do the same, and then maybe after you're done, you can go back and look at some stuff, but you want to try to be as pure whenever you go into watching a player. Here's the other name I'll give you, Dave, a guy that I was, you know, Thompson, I'm high on, and I still am. Here's a guy I was kind of down on that I know I could be wrong on, is Eric Murray, the corner from Minnesota. I just thought he played with too much contact, and he was just too grabby, but if you can kind of coach him up and teach him technique, he's a really good athlete. The test did really well at the combine. I think he jumped 39.5 inches in the vertical. That's a guy that if he finds the right system that kind of lets him thrive with contact, he could really carve out a good career. So I was down on him, but I could definitely see the athletic traits there.
Let's see, to kind of wrap up the show, well, Joshua Garnett, he's going to go in the first round, isn't he?
Well, I mean, if you talked a lot about...
Or is it cool? Is it cooled down now?
I mean, it hasn't cooled down for me. I still think he's a first rounder, you know, all day, but a lot of people think he's a second round guy, and I don't really know what the case is for against him being in the first round. I find it a little hard to believe that a guard really won't be taken in the first round. I'm not sure when the last time that's happened was. He's a first rounder for me, and I mean, if you get him in the second, then you have yourself some fantastic value. That's all I care about.
Yeah, let's say Billings, Alexander, William Jackson III, and then, of course, you know, the other corner, the defensive backs ahead of them are all off the board. Let's say the defensive tackle out of Louisiana Tech, Vernon Butler's off the board as well. At what point, and let's say Shaq Lawson's gone. I mean, a lot of ifs here,
yeah.
but I mean, at what point does Garnett really become a attractive option for the Steelers, or is it?
I just don't think he is after you sign Ramon Foster. I mean, you want guys that can come in and contribute right away, and I mean, he's going to sit for the year, and you know, if you want to go on offense, I mean, okay, but you got to have a plan for a guy to get on the field, you know, day one. And even if all those options are off the board in some sort of wacky scenario, I just, as much as I like Garnett, I just you're not going to play him year one. You got to go, you know, guards you can plug and play. There'll be other Garnetts in the future.
And being people are all over the board, what if he's there in round two? He won't be there in round two, will he?
I my jaw would hit the floor if he was, Dave. But if he was, then okay, maybe he enters the conversation more depending on what you did round one. So, yeah, I'm more open to it, obviously, the farther you go along. But at 58, sure, 25, no thank you.
Now you know you're hoping for, obviously, one season out of Ramon Foster. But, you know, when Ramon Foster – his play drops, it's going to drop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
I mean, there's going to be a huge drop off when he goes.
He's a good technician, though. He'll get by on that enough for an extra season. He'll squeeze out.
Right. So you think it's, I mean, lock, stock, and barrel that he's two seasons left in him?
I mean, I think that's the expectation. I mean, who knows? He's one injury away from something happening. But I think either way, he's your starter this year. And if you need a guard next year, you can get a guard next year. You know, those guys, you know, are all guys that have to sit for a couple of years. You know, I mean, you know, they've had some success with a bunch of guards every year that come in and do well.
And I'm sure people will take that as me trying to run Ramon Foster out of town. I've been wanting to soul defenders of Ramon Foster over the years. Nothing flashy. You just know exactly what you're going to get out of him. You know, mm-hmm. A very, very one of the most – I was screaming for Foster really to play more way back when the team was trying to shoehorn, Doug Legursky in one of those guard mm-hmm. spots for a little while there. I just think Foster You just know what you're going to get in pass protection and run blocking with him, a very, very consistent player.
Let me ask you this last question here, Dave. It's a little open-ended, and I'll try to keep it concise, but I have a report going up tomorrow on Jakeem Grant. Do you know the name Jakeem Grant at all?
I know the name. I just haven't watched much on it.
But you know he's kind of like a really small, fast, kind of crazy dude, right?
Right.
I watch his tape, and I won't spoil anything on the report, but – you know, obviously he's going to draw a lot of Archer comparisons in Pittsburgh. And I think a lot of ways those aren't true, but I can see some of those ways, you know, really, really fast, severely undersized. I mean, Grant is like 5'6", 160. I mean, he's super, super tiny. You know, do you let the Archer pick and the fact that that was a failure influence you on Grant, or are you able to look at those independently, and would you still consider Grant even knowing the Archer kind of disaster?
You know, throwing the rainy on top
right,
of it.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, it's mm-hmm. just, it's hard to ignore. It's hard to take those blinders mm-hmm. off. You know, in today's NFL, those kind of players have to be more than just a guy that, you, in other words, you have to be able to play them without the red siren going off on top mm-hmm. of their helmet.
True, very true.
You know, when you put them on the field, it has to be because they're able to do more than just one thing with getting them the ball out in space, because it sets off such a red flag, in my opinion. They have to be able to run between the tackles some. They have to, in some aspects, you might grit your teeth, but they have to be able to pass protect to some degree. And they better be good route runners on mm-hmm. top of it. So I would be scared to death players like that.
Yeah.
But all right, we're running low on time here. Mike Tomlin is in South Florida. He's actually in Bradenton today at the Pirates, making his annual visit to Pirates spring training. After that, one could only imagine that he's going to go to the Florida State Pro Day and then the Miami Pro Day after that. So the Steelers usually have big big presence there at both those Pro Days. I would expect Kevin Colbert to be at both of those as well too. Keith Butler, Todd Haley as well too. So we'll keep you posted on what we find out about that in the coming days. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Cazora at Alex_Cazora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate, please go to SteelersDepot.com and find that in the navigational bar. We just got a donation in the other day from, who was it here? Jimmy Fowler. Jimmy, thanks for the donation. We appreciate that. And we try to read all these on the air as we get them in as well, too. James Waller. I'm not sure if I hit him recently. He also is another recent donator as well, too. Folks, and as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.